This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
There is a lot of unregulated business, to put it nicely, and many of the people who use the laundromat and the people who are going to work there are not necessarily on the books. And I'm a pretty black and white by the book kind of guy. So I was uncomfortable just with the deregulated nature of the business. And I sold it because it just wasn't for me.
Right. That's up by Union City's up by the tunnel, right? The Lincoln Tunnel?
Correct. It's right by the tunnel. And I had never been exposed to Union City before, but it's a great, vibrant Hispanic neighborhood that is just, you know, Cuban and Mexican, and you've got these amazing cultures.
A lot of culture up there, yeah.
A lot of culture and great people, but it's just, it was not a comfortable business for me to be part of. At the same time, Christina, my wife, had some health issues over the last year, and so we were a little distracted by that as well. So I sold the laundromat, but that was one that I thought was interesting. We also looked at, I looked at a steel manufacturing plant in, I think it was in Weehawken, and they were making steel cables for the manufacturing industry. And it was a very unique business, and it was competing with China. And we looked at the numbers, and it just, the competition from foreign actors and the fluctuation in steel pricing made it a risky business to be in, you know, highly volatile, but very interesting business, and came close. But
so you were there making cables to be used in the manufacturing business?
To be used in elevators and manufacturing. Yeah, they were woven cables for elevators.
Like braided
lifts.
Cables they look like, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Pretty unique. So you'd be selling spools of them, like large spools of...
That's right.
Yeah, makes sense.
That's right.
That was up in that area too?
That was up in the Weehawken, very close to actually where Pantone was,
You know, it's funny. I think Union City itself was known at one point like either the sewing or the embroidery capital of the world.
It was the embroidery.
That was it was it embroidery? Was,
yeah, the embroidery capital of the world. If you're going on, I think it's Route 46, there's actually a placard on one of the bridges that says welcome
that?
To.
Yeah. That's probably why I know it. I probably saw that one time.
It may be.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
I'm Ron Pateski. I'm the owner of Mr. Handyman of South Orange, Westfield, Scotch Plains, and Metuchen. We actually cover six counties in New Jersey, and we are the best reviewed handyman service in New Jersey. We have been for over 12 years.
All right. So I thank you, Ron, for coming on the podcast. I know it took us a little while to get hooked up, but I think what you're doing is important. And I also wanted to talk to you because you had a prior career before you bought the franchise. And I'd like to talk to you a little bit about, you know, your background in management and business, and then, you know, how you got into it. Why did you choose this type of a business, and why did you go franchise and all that stuff? Because I think there's a lot of business owners out there who, they might be entrepreneurs, they might be not, but they're certainly business owners, and a franchise is sometimes a good, you know, a good option for them because it's like a business in a box. You get a lot of support and a lot of guidance if it's the right, you know, franchise opportunity. So maybe we can go back like where you grew up and educated and what business you were in before and how you kind of moved up to running this business.
Sure, sure. And Mitch, thank you very much for inviting me on.
Oh, my pleasure.
I'm delighted to do it. And so I actually grew up in South Orange, New Jersey. Okay. And ironically, the business that we bought is Mr. Handyman of South Orange and a bunch of other towns. That's happenstance because I left South Orange at about 16, moved around the country a bit, came back to raise my kids in Montclair.
Okay.
And my career was started in the copier printer business. I happened to go to work for Canon USA. My dad actually told me my entire life how great the Japanese business culture was and wanted me to go to work for a Japanese company. And I got out of school and I actually managed restaurants for a period of time. And at some point, realized that that wasn't a great long-term career path as you're having kids and restaurants.
Right.
I love restaurants.
But yeah, but you're out all night, right?
You're out all night. And my wife at the time, my ex-wife now, you know, said at a certain point, if we're going to have kids, you're not going to be out all night. So,
right.
So I had a business degree. I went to work at Canon in 1991 at the very early stages of the color copier business. And I was fortunate. I hit it at the right time. And I actually ended up running the marketing for the color copier division of Canon Americas. I ended up spending a lot of time in Japan.
Okay.
After 10 years of doing that, had another good opportunity to move to Ricoh Americas, another Japanese company.
Right.
Also, sure. Camera, copier, printer space. It happened to have a headquarters 3 miles from where I was raising my kids, and ended up being there for 10 years, ran the entire marketing organization for what ended up being about a $5 billion Ricoh Americas group.
Yeah, wasn't Ricoh in West Caldwell near the airport over there?
That was it. You got it.
Yeah, I grew up in West Caldwell off Passaic Avenue, so I know that.
I worked at Passaic Avenue for 10 years and again spent at least a week or two a month in Japan. And I loved Canon and Ricoh. My sort of 20 years of the digital print market was just a huge blast. 1987, I had an opportunity to go to run a company that was one of my partners, Pantone, the color company, color standards, color.
Everybody knows what their Pantone color is for whatever it is, their website or whatever, their logo.
That's right. So Pantone was purchased by a company called X-Rite, a publicly traded company that made spectrophotometry to read color in the industrial space, really the world leader in that. And they needed somebody to run the Carlstadt new company that they had bought. And I had worked with Pantone for years, and the owner of Pantone that had just sold X-Rite said, why don't you talk to this guy? He understands the technology. He understands color. And that was a fortunate break for me. I spent 9 years running Pantone through new management. We were acquired by a large conglomerate called Danaher, but a terrific 9 years running Pantone. And we were, and Pantone still is, sort of the world leader in color. And
yeah, that's weird. Like everybody, like you know what your Pantone colors are. I don't know why. There's no real other competitors in the color business, it seems. I mean, there are paint companies, different color companies, but you don't, I mean, I've never had a designer tell me a different kind of color. Oh, this isn't Pantone, it's a different company. Are there other companies that do color in the business?
There are, believe it or not, depending on the country that you're in. So Pantone is a very international standard.
Okay.
If you go to Germany, there's a company called RAL. If you go to Japan, there's a company called DIC. If you go to Korea, there's another company. So although Pantone is the most dominant player in even those countries, you have regional players and then you have industry players. So in the textile market, you have specific textile standards companies that
makes
compete
sense
with Pantone. So it's actually more competitive than you think, but it's a very close business. So I had relationships with all those other competitors. Pantone was even a part of those other competitors. We had a huge licensing business where we licensed not only to, you know, the paint companies, but we had, you know, mugs and hats and clothes that were Pantone branded. So it was a really diverse and interesting business to be in.
Nice. And that was in Carlstadt, you said?
The headquarters and the factory are in, and we're in Carlstadt. That business has become You know, it actually has been diluted by digital standards and by so many other trends that although Pantone's name is still big, the opportunity for people to get free standards, not to pay Pantone.
As all you need is the code and you can put it into your color software and it's going to make it match.
Correct. Yeah. And with digital, even spectrophotometry, the company that bought us was creating technology that was really sort of disemboweling the Pantone business kind of slowly but surely. So in 2017, 2018, I took the opportunity to get out of Pantone. The company that had acquired us was looking to do lots of different things with Pantone. And, you know, they were really big and I didn't agree with everything. So at the end of the day, it was good for me to jump, and it was good for them that I did. And so my wife and I, and my wife Christina and I were married 4 years ago. She raised her kids in Summit, second marriage for both of us. So I moved to Summit back then. We were both divorced, met each other. We took her three kids, my two kids, brought them together in Summit, and we both were looking for something new to do. She actually spent 20 years with Martha Stewart, publisher of several of her magazines. Yeah. So she had a great media career. And pretty much at the same time, we were both thinking, what can we do now? And we were both part of sort of large international organizations. We thought being part of the community with small business would be a good pivot and a nice new road for us. So we were looking for any business that made sense, right?
So it wasn't like you're like, well, I like, you know, doing construction and fixing things up and let's look at that. Or it was just you were looking at all across the spectrum.
You been name it. We were just looking for the right kind of business, the right size. I actually bought a laundromat when I first got out of Pantone just because somebody had said to me in Summit, the laundromat business is a great business to be in. So I bought a laundromat in Union City. And then we were looking for other businesses that had the right profile. And it's funny because we were a customer of Mr. Handyman. And we loved the owner. We liked the technology that they used. We liked the service. And I had a discussion with the owner, Dave Ambinder, who was a Westfield guy. And he said, I'm about to retire. Do you know anyone who's looking to buy a business? And that's when Christina and I both said,
so that might be interesting. It was timing and everything. So you were actually a customer of his, of that franchisee.
I was a customer of the business that we bought. That is correct.
Very good. Well, that's a lot of times how it happens, you know, because you have a comfort level and you've used their service before and he approaches you or you're talking about it one day and, you know, I guess it felt right. So you weren't just looking at franchise businesses, though. You were looking at all kinds of different businesses?
Looking at everything. I bought a laundromat because I thought it would be an interesting business to jump into. We looked at franchises. We looked at other, you know, I looked at factories. I had come at Pantone. I was in the manufacturing business. I looked at manufacturers of all kinds of things, looked at international opportunities. So we were looking at anything and everything. And at the end of the day, the owner, Dave Ambinder, the guy in Westfield who we had been a customer of, he was a huge part of why we bought his business because we liked him. We knew he had integrity. We knew he had grown a good business. But when it comes to franchises, we've learned a lot. And so when we were looking at Mr. Handyman, we went to Michigan to visit the headquarters of Mr. Handyman. We went to Chicago. We went to Florida. We went to Washington, D.C. and actually visited other franchisees to understand who they were, what types of people they were, what kind of operations they ran. So it was a lot of deep due diligence.
Right, definitely. Well, I mean, you got to know who your franchisor is, what kind of support he gives you. Are the other franchisees happy?
Right.
You know, what's his background? You don't want him to show up at a, you know, an anti-LGBTQ, you know, thing that you don't believe in one day and you're like, what? And then it's all reflective on you. So it's, you are kind of marrying that person or that organization. You want to know it's, and I've looked at a lot of franchise opportunities for clients. You really got to dig down. It's like buying a condominium. You got to know what's going on with the association, what their financial issues are, you know?
Exactly.
I don't know if you remember. I don't know how long you've been in Westfield with Mr. Handyman?
We've owned the business for 2 years.
Okay. So before that, next to, you know where Jay's Cycle is? And there's a men's clothing store there now.
Absolutely,
a friend of mine, Mitch Gambert's a friend of mine in the family. So before that, maybe a couple of stores before that, there was a bath store. I think it was called Bath Junkie. It was called Bath Junkie. And this young girl, it was a franchise, but it was a small franchise. Maybe they had 8 locations, 10 locations throughout the United States. And she had found this person and had bought into the franchise. And she was really killing it. I mean, she was busy with kids' things and making. You'd make like your own bath stuff. You'd make bath balls. You'd make, right, fragrances, things like that. She was busy. Well, one day the franchisor either got into financial trouble or decided they want to get out of the business, whatever, and shut down the whole thing. And then she was kind of, well, am I going to rebuild this all myself and do the inventory and this and that? I used to get it through their suppliers. And, you know, she's younger. So she said, you know what? I'm going to go back to school and I'm going to pursue something else. But she did it reluctantly. So I think that it's important when, you know, people are listening that you got to definitely, it's a great opportunity. It's a great way to own a business if it's the right franchise or, you know, and they're supportive. Now, here's a good question for you for people listening. So you come out of management, right? You're in corporate America. How do you start and how do you go about sourcing business opportunities and reviewing them and seeing them? Where do you find them? I mean, they're not just like in the newspaper. Some of them may be.
It's a great question. And so I started with business brokers.
Okay.
And there are some good business brokers as I started to dig, talk to guys like you who are, you know, local business owners.
Right.
I found that the, you know, like a franchise, there are some good ones and there are some bad ones. 100%. You really need to vet your broker. But
yeah,
I found a very good franchise, not franchise, a business broker who was just looking at the size requirement that we had, the profit margins we wanted, and kind of taking the profile and coming to us with opportunities. And I found that that was a great way to work. Now, I knew Dave Ambinder and the owner of this.
Right. That was different with this one. Yeah.
Well, but it actually is interesting, Mitch, because I got this company profile also through the business broker. So at the same time as I was talking to Dave,
got it.
The business broker said, hey, you know, I think this might be a good opportunity for you. And that kind of sparked our interest even more. And then we have a lot of real estate friends who live in Westfield or in Summit. And
sure,
we have other people who have a need for the handyman, a reliable handyman service. And as time went on, we started to sell ourselves on the idea that it was a good market to be in, a good company to buy. And,
right,
and that's how we came to it.
Yeah, definitely. It depends on the area, right? So there's some areas where it's more blue collar and they're more do-it-yourselfers. And you get to areas like Westfield or Summit or whatever, and they're hotbeds of, you know, everybody's looking for help. They work in the city. They're very busy, two income earners sometimes, and they don't have time or the skills to, you know, do things, and they need reliable people. They're not going to hire somebody off of Craigslist. They want to have a reputable business that's insured and, you know, all those types of things. So
they,
I know,
might
a guy,
hire someone off of Craigslist, but they might regret it. So we think that our reliability is important.
Yeah, exactly. No, Craigslist is, I don't want to say anything bad about Craigslist on the podcast, but we're not on live radio. I don't think we've had good experience with them. But a good friend of mine, Russ Miller, is a business broker in Westfield, actually. He's got a company called Murphy Business Systems. It's also a franchise, ironically. There's a bunch of guys around, but he's a good guy, and he's a client of mine. And he actually, ironically, spent, I think, a good portion of his career building a franchise system for Huntington Learning Systems.
Interesting.
And he had built 200 or 300 locations for him. And he doesn't, you know, necessarily specialize in franchises. He does a lot of resales of franchises like yours did.
Yeah.
But you know, he knows that business, and I've done some closings for him. But yeah, it's definitely a good way for, now you have more of a business background, but even for people that are getting started, looking to start a business, looking to get into a business, franchise is a good way. I mean, everything's in a box. It's in a binder. There's manuals. There's guidance as to how to do it. I mean, you're not running McDonald's, but still, I'm sure there's a whole methodology and how you run your business and systems, keep track of things. You can't just call a bunch of guys, tell them to go to someone's house and fix this. It doesn't work that way. So are you or your wife handy? Like, is this hands-on or you're not doing any of the work?
It is remarkably hands-on. So I am not a carpenter. I'm not a handyman, although I've always been interested in doing stuff around the house.
But I like doing it, but I'm not good at it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I listen, our customers don't want me showing up at the house to do the work. But we are, you know, we bought a franchise that is very hands-on. This is not what you would call a passive franchise. There are some.
Yeah.
But in this case, we're doing marketing, heavy-duty marketing. Dispatch, we have people who are in the office, but I need to be on the phone with customers every day. We have commercial customers. We have
like troubleshooting issues and making them happy and all that.
You name it. There's some people just want to talk to the owner. Some people are very happy and want to tell you how great we are. Some people are, they have a good example. We have a customer who's a longtime customer. They have squirrels living in their attic, and it's a 100-something year old house.
Yeah.
Getting rid of squirrels is a difficult thing to do, but you also need to have an exterminator. You can't just cover up holes with wood and aluminum. So you need to have those difficult conversations that Mr. Customer, our guys can't just go cover that hole and have squirrels in your house.
They're going to get back in.
They're going to get, well, or they can't get out. They're going to go into your house, into your living area, or they're going to chew their way back in. So you need to do it the right way. So there are a lot of conversations that are, here's how the right way to do it is, here's how a handyman who may not be a good handyman, may not be insured, may not have scruples, may not be ethical, might do it, but we do things by the book, and you have to discuss that. So dispatch, buying materials, talking to customers, it's a very hands-on business.
Yeah. Have you had to learn how to do things, not necessarily do them with your own hands, but know whether it's right or it's wrong, or if a customer complains, you got to go and you don't know what you're looking at?
Absolutely. It's been, this particular business, unless you want to, for me, because I need to understand the business that I'm in,
right?
I needed to learn about windows and doors and moldings and doing drywall and what not to do, what to do, how long does it take, how much is it going to cost. So we have been drinking from a fire hose for, I'd say, the good first year was just learning on the job. Second year has been a little bit easier, but it's important to know how your business works. What are the pitfalls? Are your guys telling you the truth? Are they telling customers the truth? You need to be able to dig in and vet information from your guys, from suppliers, and from customers. It's important.
Now, the former owner has people that you kept on that had been working for him for a long time that knew what
they were doing? We're very lucky. So we have five guys. We had 10 trucks running before this current situation. We currently have fewer than that, but all of the guys who are working for us now are longtime employees who've been with the company for over 5 years. One guy is new. He's our mason, and he's phenomenal, and I expect him to be with the company for a long time. But we're very unusual that we keep good employees. We keep the guys for a long time because, frankly, we pay them pretty well. We have health care. We treat our guys with respect. They're partners in the business. They're going into people's houses.
Right.
We expect them to be our representatives to our customers, and so we have really good guys, and we're fortunate that they are long-term employees.
Yeah, because that's a problem, right? Guys leave, and then you got to show up on the job, and you can't do the masonry work. That's a skill that you if the guy didn't show up. So I guess that's always a risk of as opposed to being not a restaurant, but in a business where you can jump behind the cashier, and take it over and manage with the business for the day. If somebody doesn't show up, you got a problem, right?
You need to be able to fill in. Now, normally pre-coronavirus, we had enough capacity and we were, good at keeping capacity so that if someone was called in sick, we could usually do a little bit of a calendar move and we'd be okay. Today, because we have, we have five guys instead of 10, and normally we have 10 right now, it's a little bit harder. Now, good news is, we see a big pickup. We're getting guys back. We are hiring guys who have great backgrounds, great reputation, and we expect that a month from now we'll be up and running, at a pretty high rate. And then we have a lot of flexibility.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSight Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSight. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSight and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's L-A-W to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show. Any of your guys, are they okay with going into people's homes if they have wearing PPE and stuff like that? Or are they a little nervous about it? Or
they are nervous, and that's a good thing. You know, they're thinking about themselves and
it makes them be cautious, right?
And they're cautious. So our guys are, you know, we don't want guys who aren't cautious. So they're wearing masks, they're wearing gloves. And some of our guys, to be honest, will go to if they go to a business or a house where they don't think the people that they're visiting are being cautious, where they think it's a dangerous environment, I'm fine with them calling me up and saying, I don't feel comfortable. And I'll call the customer and let them know that we just are being overly cautious right now and we might need to wait a month before we come back.
Yeah, that might be a tough conversation to have to tell people that you think they're not being cautious enough in their own home and they're insulted, right?
I've had a few of those recently, and I try to do it in a very nice way. But if you've got people who are not respecting that you have an outsider coming in and don't seem to be nervous about having an outsider coming in, you know, that is something to be careful about right now.
So I would assume that the services really is what you're providing, right? The physical labor services or whatever you do, is that more tied to who you have able to work for you? Or are there services that, you know, Mr. Handyman says, well, these are the services that we provide. You got to find guys to be able to do them. I mean, how does that work in terms of, you know, what they can ask you to do?
Sure. It's a good question. So at the core of all of our guys, we have good carpenters. So our guys, one of the, you know, you must have in order to work for Mr. Handyman is carpenter skills.
Yeah, because that's a bread and butter thing that everyone generally needs, right?
It's bread and butter.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need to have the tools to put together a swing set. You need to be able to do drywall. You need to be able to do windows and doors. Those are sort of our core competencies.
And that's all carpentry.
But on the kind of, you know, most of our guys have additional skills. Tile work. So we do some beautiful floor and wall tiles, bathrooms, restaurants. We do a lot of tile work. And I'd say right now, four of our five guys are very good tilers. So that's something that not every Mr. Handyman has, but we've got good tiling competency.
Yeah,
exactly. We have a mason. We've always had a mason. So our old mason retired. We went out and we found a good young mason. And he happens to be a great carpenter. He happens to be skilled at almost every part of our business. He does roofing, siding, gutters, but his cement, masonry, brickwork is spectacular. So having that is a nice to have for a Mr. Handyman. But I'll tell you, he's booked out several weeks right now because people need small masonry jobs done.
Right.
And big masonry companies aren't necessarily going to
work. No, they want to come and put a whole wall around your house. They don't want to. Yeah, I would think that it's a dying art. I would think to find a young mason probably be hard to do. I don't think it's like a lot of the trades. They're not being passed down from, you know, generation to generation. I just did it was the middle of April, but I did the editing today of a podcast. I interviewed the president and CEO of NJBIA, New Jersey Business and Industry Association. And Michelle was telling me that they put out a report a while back about, you know, that there's other paths. Not everyone has to go to college. You know, people can get certificates and educate themselves while they're working. Whether it's, you know, and there's good money to be made working in trades, especially when there's less competition because, you know, I mean, I think a mason, especially someone who does smaller jobs, it's got to be a ton of masonry work around backyards and porches and steps and fireplaces that need reappointment, you know, all kinds of stuff that you're right. The bigger masonry companies, they want big jobs. They want to come in and redo your whole landscape in your backyard and stuff.
Right.
And you're like, I don't need that. I just need this fixed, and you can't get them to do it. So what other jobs do you see that's like regular, you get regularly called on to do in homes. This is residential, I'm talking.
Right. Residential, it's, you know, our number one job for residential are holes in drywall. And, you know, the customer will say, well, my son threw, you know, the baseball through the wall, but it's generally fist size
right.
drywall holes. And, yeah. you know, whether it's a fist or it's a baseball, that's leaks, drywall, ceiling leaks. So pipe breaks.
Okay, right.
We have a lot of plumbing and HVAC companies that rely on us to put Humpty Dumpty back together again when they pull your walls apart to change the pipes out. So that's, you know, drywall work is actually our number one activity, and doing crown molding, masonry, or
finishing
carpentry
work, type of stuff.
Yeah.
That's so you don't do the electrical or the plumbing. You either sub that out, or you work, or you do it after they're done with their work.
We do light electric and light plumbing, meaning that there's already a box there. There's already electric there. We're
right.
changing the ceiling fan out. We're changing the light fixture out. Plumbing, we're changing the sink or the toilet. But if it's in the wall, we sub it out or we recommend people. We have some really good plumbers and electricians that we trust, and we'll either just give you the phone number and have you call them, or if you want us to, we'll take care of it for you and sub it out.
Right. So you're not running any new circuits from the board.
Correct.
To
Correct.
Electrocute your guys.
Exactly. We want safety first. So licensed yeah. guys is important when you're putting new lines in, but our guys can do the light stuff.
Okay. So let me jump back a little bit. When you were looking at other businesses, do you remember any businesses that were potentials that you looked at that were interesting to you? I'm curious to see what's out there, what you guys came across.
You know, we did. We looked at, the laundromat is a good example, Mitch. I bought
right.
the laundromat. I had a very large laundromat in Union City. And it is a good business, but it depends on your temperament. So a Union City laundromat has, great family, town, lovely people, but there is a lot of unregulated business, to put it nicely. And many of the people who use the laundromat and the people who are going to work there are not necessarily on the books. And I'm a
right.
pretty black and white by the book kind of guy. So I was uncomfortable just with the deregulated nature of the business, and I sold it because it just wasn't for me.
Right. That's up by Union City's up by the tunnel, right? The Lincoln Tunnel.
Correct. It's right yeah. by the tunnel. And I had never been exposed to Union City before, but
yeah.
it's a great, vibrant Hispanic neighborhood that is just, you know, Cuban and Mexican, and you've got these amazing cultures.
A lot of culture up there, yeah.
A lot of culture and great people, but it's just it was not a comfortable business for me to be part of. At the same time, Christina, my wife, had some health issues over the last year. And so we were a little distracted by that as well. So I sold the laundromat, but that
Got
was
it.
One that I thought was interesting. We also looked at a steel manufacturing plant in, I think it was in Weehawken, and they were making steel cables for the manufacturing industry. And it was a very unique business, and it was competing with China, and we looked at the numbers, and it just, the competition from foreign actors and the fluctuation in steel pricing made it a risky business to be in, you know, highly volatile,
yeah.
but very interesting business, and came close. But,
so you were there making cables to be used in the manufacturing business?
To be used in elevators and manufacturing. Yeah, they were woven cables for
right,
elevators,
like braided
lifts.
Cables they look like, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
yeah.
Pretty
so
unique.
So you'd
business.
Be selling spools of them, like large spools of.
That's right.
Yeah, makes sense.
That's right.
That was up in that area too?
That was up in the Weehawken, very
it's
close to actually
area,
where Pantone
yeah.
was, yeah.
You know, it's funny. I think Union City itself was known at one point like either the sewing or the embroidery capital of the world.
It was the embroidery.
That
right.
was it was
it
embroidery.
Was, yeah, the embroidery capital of the world. If you're going on, I think it's Route 46. There's actually a placard on one of the bridges that says
it
"Welcome
says that?
To." Yeah.
That's probably why I know it. I probably saw that one time.
It may be, but there was also a lot of kind of famous mafia activity out of Union City at one
yeah,
time
of course.
As well.
From Hoboken through Weehawken to Union City, that
you
whole
bet.
Area.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. So, yeah, I think that I was going to have on another guy. His name is Jim, and he owns a Minuteman Press location. But he used to work for McDonald's on the, you know, with all their franchisees.
Yeah.
And it is a very from the franchisor side, it's a very unique, you know, way to build a business. I mean, you're not. you're not growing your business and opening up other locations and managing the employees. You're basically creating a model and then selling that model to other people along with equipment and everything. So as a franchisee, obviously this varies from business to business. What do you get from the franchisor on a regular basis?
And it does vary greatly. And by the way, we looked at a lot of franchises as part of this whole due diligence and looking for companies. And, you know, the printing franchises, food franchises, we looked at a ton, HVAC, plumbing.
Right.
And what we get from Mr. Handyman specifically is a lot of support from other owners. So the number one, I think Christina, my wife, would agree that the best part of Mr. Handyman is actually not the headquarters, although they're good. And it's actually owned by a very large franchising organization called the Neighborly Group out of Texas. Mr. Handyman franchise location headquarters is in Michigan, but the overall headquarters is in Waco, Texas. And they have 27 different franchises underneath that umbrella.
Meaning in different industries or different verticals that they sell. So they're in the franchise business.
Exactly. But they're mostly focused on services. So they have the plumbing, they have electric, they have Mr. Handyman, they have cleaning services. So they're mostly focused on in the home services or in local business services like a Mr. Handyman. But what we get really is the camaraderie and the information from other owners who are very much like us, probably former business owners who decided to buy a local business. Some of them are handymen or are professionals who have just bought the franchise because they like the concept.
Right.
But they've been a ginormous support network for us. We're on the phone with another owner around the country at least three times a week. We're in email every day. We're sharing information, sharing best practices every day. So that's a huge, huge benefit. Other than that, we get technology from the headquarters. So when you are a Mr. Handyman customer, you're getting a dispatch from a system called ServiceTitan. You're getting billed. Everything is
all
kind
packaged.
Of enveloped. It's packaged. And it's really a nice experience as a customer because we're easy to communicate. We have a record of everything we've done at your house. We have pictures. We can come 5 years later and say, Mitch, we fixed that. We hung that picture and it just fell out of the wall. We're going to put it back up for you. And it's on us because we guarantee our work. So it's a very kind of enveloping technology, but it means the customer experience is better. And that's been a nice thing.
Right. And these are systems that you wouldn't build if you had your own local fix-it private business, right?
You got it.
But the economies of scale allow you to do it. Makes sense.
And it works in COVID-19 now that we're dispersed around.
Yeah, even more so.
You're looking at, my office is in my house and my operations guy is in his house and our customer service person's in her house. And the technology allows us to work pretty seamlessly. It's not seamless and customers don't necessarily feel like they're working with a dispersed group of people.
Right. Yeah. But is everything in the cloud? Like it was pretty easy for you to make that transition?
Completely.
It's all web-based, right?
It's all in the cloud. Even our phone system is in the cloud, everything. So we made some of those choices on our own.
Right.
But we decided early on that everything would be movable. And so we are 100% in the cloud. We also made a purchase right before this coronavirus. We bought a building in Springfield, which is going to be the Mr. Handyman headquarters. And timing is a little bit weird, but at some point we're looking forward to being in an office because it's nice to share customer information. It's nice to be able to talk to the guys, have them come visit. You know, having a face-to-face in this business is still our preference.
Do you have trucks or do they just go out in their own vehicles?
Each one of our guys has a Mr. Handyman branded vehicle that we obviously give them. They bring them home at night. So it's not like they're bringing them back to a dispatch area. Our guys have the trucks as long as they're employed with us. They have tools on those trucks. They've got, credit card to get gas and buy materials. And so it's a pretty all-encompassing experience, even for the technicians who aren't used to that. Most of them were their own Mr. Handyman at some point, or they were.
Oh, really?
Most of them. And, it's hard to run a business and do the business. So you're out there working all day, and then you have to come home and do bills. You have to bill people. You've got to do marketing. It's hard.
Yeah, no, you have an advantage. If this was your first career and you're just getting started and you were 23 years old or whatever, and you're very good with your hands, that would be great. But you'd still be going crazy trying to do the business. I have friends who are dentists. They're young. They're having kids. My daughter babysits for them Saturday nights, and they don't go out. They go back to the office to do all their billing and, you know, their invoicing and everything like that, because they're just getting started and they're just building the business. But I think that's like the goal, and it's not a focused goal of a lot of business owners. It should be, where they can design their business to get up to the point where they can work on the business,
right,
and manage the business, as opposed to doing the work inside the business. You don't want to be an employee of a company you also own. That's no fun. What are you doing this for? You know, so it almost good that you're not as handy as you'd like to be, because it forces you to be the business owner and to be the manager and to focus on the business development and to rely on these guys, you know, to a certain extent, to do the work, you know, because you don't want to, it's not valuable to you to do the work.
Absolutely true. And to grow the business, you know, to move into areas like aging in place, where you don't want to just be a guy walking into the building saying, I'll put up a bar in your bathroom. You want to know about aging in place. You want to have practices that are safe and that are compliant with aging in place, you know, real safety. And so I can take the time to actually get certified on things that will make the business better for our customers, and our guys, you know, then can follow through, but they wouldn't be able to do it on their own.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So how do you, I mean, we met in a networking group, right? So how do you go about growing the business? What's the basic strategy of finding business and landing business? And
you know, number one is good reviews. So actually having customers who are happy with us, you know, I wouldn't have known in the corporate world how not only important, but real online reviews are. You know, we have reviews on Google, on Angie's List, all over the place. And you can try to manage that, but unless your customers are actually happy and willing to give you a positive review and talk about the business and how much they like using us, that's critical to growth. So sometimes you have to ask, you know, Mitch, I know you sent us a really nice response to our work. Would you mind going on to Google and just giving us a nice review?
Sure. Because so people read that stuff. They do. You know.
They do. And then you need to amplify that through marketing, which for this kind of a business is really important. You need to manage things like Angie's List and Home Advisor, because they charge you a lot of money to use the service. So you want to be able to manage how you use them and how much, how little. And then talking to meeting other business owners in a networking group.
Right.
That's so important, because our business grows as I meet real estate people, lawyers. I meet, you know, a commercial real estate owner who's got other businesses that need help. So it's really me getting out and meeting other people who I may be able to help, because we have referrals that we can give. You know, we do a lot of mold, and, you know, we have jobs where people call us where there was flood and or mold and remediation requirements. We don't do remediation
for that type of thing. You're not pure, clean, or serve pro, right?
Exactly. But I can refer people who I meet, who I trust, who can do that. Plumbers and electricians who are licensed. We get a lot of requests to do deeper work than we should be doing. We refer it out to people that we trust and like. So my job is to get to know other business owners and make sure that we're growing our name and helping other people grow their business as well.
Now, does the franchisor give you any of that? Meaning you pay them fees, so do they give you any advertising, access to Angie's List, any of those services, manage any of that stuff for you, or is it all on you?
It's pretty much all on us. I mean, there are different companies that do things differently. We do have national agreements with commercial businesses. So a lot of retail, unfortunately, a lot of it is restaurant and retail. So right now, that's non-existent. But the headquarters does have relationships with national, you know, whether it's McDonald's or Burger King or J. Crew. We do a lot of
in-store. I think J. Crew went out of business. You mean you would get a call from like a local J. Crew because they have a relationship with Mr. Handyman.
Correct.
And they funnel it to you.
That's exactly right.
Got it. Yeah, J. Crew, unfortunately. I think, are they reorganizing? Or are they liquidating, going out of business?
I don't know that we know that yet, but I have to believe that the brand name is strong enough that they'll reorganize and come back. But, you know, the face of retail is going to change so much. A lot of our work was done in gyms, you know, whether franchise or locally owned. And, you know, when are people going to get back into the gym? When are people going to feel comfortable sweating next to other people? It's going to be a while.
I think they're going to have to redesign their floor plans to keep people separate in order to encourage them to come back. I mean, we can't go to a gym and have a mask on and be on a treadmill.
Right.
You can't do that. Right. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of that. I think this whole situation is going to change a lot of the way that we do business and, you know, the way we manage things. I could see retail going to the point where they're basically like almost one of an item in a store, and you go and you look and you decide and you order it and it's shipped to you that day or the next day, and they don't have to keep inventory and they'll keep a very small footprint because of that.
Right.
I also think office space is going to just plummet because businesses are going to say, you know, well, yeah, we have to social distance people, but we're not going to triple our space in order to do it. We got to reduce our space to save money. People can work at home part of the week, you know?
By the way, the Zoom call thing has worked pretty well, and our guys are productive at home and they don't have to commute. And I agree with you. I would say, and, you know, we're preparing for restaurants reopening, and we can help, you know, our benefit to those local businesses is we can do hands-free soap. We can help them get, you know, foot opening door pieces.
Right.
We think we can help commercial customers get back in the swing of things. We hope we do get back in the swing of things, but we're certainly going to try to be there to help.
But think about, like, in your case, you have small jobs, right? Sometimes. And sometimes to go out and to quote the job or to look at it for somebody to look at it, you don't know what you're looking at before you get out there. You could be wasting a lot of time, a lot of guests. You don't know. But if somebody could do a Zoom call with you and take their phone and put it up to the wall and you could see, well, oh, it's a small hall. We can come on Tuesday. I got a job in the area. We can squeeze you in, whatever. I think I'm going to do the same thing. I do a lot of networking with people. I would drive a half an hour to meet them for coffee. If it's just networking, we can meet on Zoom. I mean, you know, if we have clients, great. We could pull them all on the Zoom call. And I'm not saying forever, but it's definitely a more efficient way of doing things. I mean, I probably have 4 or 5 Zoom calls a day now. If I could get paid to do Zoom calls, Ron, I would be a rich guy. Instead, all my businesses are closed for the most part, which hopefully will change. But there's something I was going to ask you. Oh, I think that one of the problems that we're going to run into is that people, I think maybe it won't be a problem. Maybe it'll be good for the suburbs. I think people are going to flock out of the cities. I think people are going to, if they had ever been thinking about it, they're going to be like, you know what? You can't social distance in New York. Let's bring our kids out to the suburbs. If we got to commute in a couple of days, I will. I can work from home part of the time. There's all that land out there. Let's go. And from what I've been talking to different realtors, that's what they're seeing in the cities, where people are looking more, even more so than they ever were about. But and when this thing starts opening up, getting out. So
we
I don't know
the
what
same
the,
thing. And we have
makes
we
sense,
have
right?
Friends and relations and a lot of business connections in New York, and it makes sense. You know, people right now, their parents. And you also have kids who have parents who someday are either going to be in an assisted living or they're going to be living with the kids. And I think there are a lot of city dwellers who are thinking, my parents aren't moving into this apartment with me, so I need to go buy a house.
Right. And even the kids in the city, sometimes they would take the subway to school.
Right.
Their private school on the Upper West Side, you're going to put your kid on a subway right now? So yeah, well, I think life is not going to be the same forever. I think we're just going to forget, and it's going to seem like it's normal.
Right.
You know, like China, because they wear masks everywhere. It's just part of their life.
It's true. You know? I spent 25 years going to Japan and Asia, and, you know, I look kind of sideways at the people who are wearing masks, and now I understand it much better than I did then. Yeah. They were actually, you know, they had the sniffles, and they were protecting other people from the fact that they weren't feeling 100%, which, you know, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, I guess we learned a lot about everything that's going on. So I would think that it's going to support the housing market out here, hopefully keep prices up and people still need work.
You bet.
So,
if you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is a production of Mitchell C. Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.